This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Greetings and welcome to Carlisle ValueCast. I'm Chris Ullman, head of Carlisle's Global Communications. This is the latest in a series of podcasts featuring Carlisle's operating executives. And today we are joined by Tom Rabo. Tom is a Carlisle operating executive in the aerospace and defense sector. And since joining Carlisle in 2007, Tom has served as chairman of several of our portfolio companies, including Air Inc., Vaillant, and Synagro. And prior to joining Carlisle, Tom was president and CEO of one of our most successful investments, the 1997 acquisition of United Defense. So welcome, Tom.
Chris, it's great to be here with you.
Well, really excited today to talk about ethics. So let's level set. Give us a definition of what it even means to be ethical.
You know, to me, ethical means embracing the human values of goodness, fairness, and respect for others. Some would say these values are captured in documents such as the Ten Commandments. It clearly also includes abiding by the law. This is what ethical means to me.
So is it always a black and white issue, or how do you deal with the gray area?
Frankly, it is not always black and white, and oftentimes there are gray areas. And we all know, or we've all witnessed gray areas. They become topics for books such as the Cider House Rules and the Good Lie. But I think we have to be careful. Oftentimes it is black and white, and we wish it were gray.
That is a very good point. So can you give us a few examples of what you might refer to as kind of the big hitters? What are things that are just so clearly out of bounds?
Yeah, the big hitters, collusion, price fixing, insider trading, bribery, export violations, deceptive financial reporting. These are the type of ethical violations that can cripple a company over the long period of time, and some companies really never recover from that.
So let's look at the culture that kind of impacts whether an organization is ethical or not, or where they are on the spectrum. What are some of the factors that impact whether people are ethical or not?
The ethical framework that an organization adopts, in almost all cases, starts from the leadership, from the top. And a ethical framework is set at that time in an ongoing way in terms of what is acceptable behavior in an organization. And in the day-to-day execution, is there emphasis on accurate reporting? Is there emphasis on fairness among the employees and between supervision and the employees? Is there an emphasis on proper regulatory adherence to regulatory practices? Is there a sensitivity towards fair dealing and also conflicts of interest? These are the types of things that that environment is set. And a violation in one small area may not impact the company's long-term health. But if there is a culture of violations, that they are acceptable, that can threaten a company long-term.
So to the extent that culture impacts ethics and that it's top-down, what are some of the mechanisms or kind of mindsets that leaders have to have to be able to create a culture that adheres to very high ethics?
First of all, I think the leaders have to recognize the importance of ethics and integrity in the organization. They have to embrace that as a important element in leading an organization. Then they have to take the actions to provide the education and the example for the employees of the company. And that really does include having courses on ethical behavior, ensuring that they act with the highest of ethical standards. The leadership can't pick and choose when they're going to be ethical and when they're not. In the case of one company that adopted or utilized bribery in day-to-day activities, they just found that that was what was necessary for that company in that industry. Down the road, they were found guilty of bribery, and in that investigation, they also found that they had problems with export control, and they also had problems with financial reporting. That shouldn't be a surprise. An organization will pick up on what the ethical behavior is of the leadership. And if they find a flaw there, they will see that as an excuse to cut corners themselves.
Can you talk a little bit about the signs of either a healthy environment when it comes to ethics or kind of a sick environment? I mean, what's it like day to day in one versus the other?
In a healthy environment, you will see an organization that shows respect towards one another, who will honor the contracts that they have, and they won't try to make excuses to get out of certain commitments they've made. That could be in labor contracts, or it could be in purchase orders or in customer delivery orders. You'll see a higher trust of management, not just in terms of the trust in their leadership, but also in the trust that the management means what they say and will do what they have committed to do. It's a very different environment than an environment in an organization where the leadership is questionable, where people do not really trust what is being told to them by the leadership in terms of the commitments made, or even the explanation of where the business is going. And also in a weak environment, much of the data that's generated and the reporting that's done is questionable. And you just get that sense when you're dealing with that type of an organization.
Can an unethical organization be successful?
I would guess there's always one-offs. And I would never be one to say that an unethical organization cannot be successful. I would guess that their probability of success is much lower. Just as I would say there's no guarantee that a highly ethical organization is necessarily going to succeed, but I think your probability of success is quite a bit higher.
Do you think the ethical bar changes in a public company environment versus a private company?
You know, I really don't. I think there are certain regulatory requirements in a public company environment that you do not have in a private company environment, and therefore you have to do your very best to live up to those regulatory requirements. But I think the fundamental focus on running a highly ethical organization is the same whether you're public or private.
Tom, you've been in the business world for around 45 years. What are some of the factors that have shaped your commitment to ethics and understanding of the best environment for success?
For the first part of my career, I was in a highly ethical company. And I took that for granted. I thought everyone had high ethical standards and, you know, you just didn't pad expense reports. You didn't do any false quality reporting. You made sure your financial reporting was as accurate as possible. You always lived up to your contracts. Then, as my career went on, I joined a company that was at the other end of that spectrum. And it was a huge education for me. And it made me appreciate where I had been. And I was also then able to compare the performance of those two organizations. And in terms of return on investment to shareholders, in terms of treatment of customers, in terms of being responsive and responsible towards employees, it was the difference between night and day. And so it was quite an education.
And you just mentioned customers there. So what kind of impact is there on customers, shareholders, employees of either an ethical or an unethical environment?
Well, I think as a leadership in a company, you have to ask yourself the question when you're dealing with customers, how do customers see us? Do they see us as an organization that can be trusted going forward? Do they see us as having consistent quality? Do they see us as an organization that's true to our word, somebody that they can really depend upon in the future? For the employees want to know, is the leadership trustworthy? Will the leadership live up to its commitments? And most importantly, is the leadership respectful of the employees? And then finally, for the shareholders will punish you if you have ethical problems. We've seen that. I mean, there have been a number of companies where their stock has been battered because of poor leadership, whereas we've also seen companies, Intel, Cummins Engine, Deere, Goodrich, who have all been rewarded with higher price-earnings ratios because of the assessment of their management team as being highly ethical.
So even though doing the right thing might disadvantage you for the short term, in the long term, it's to your benefit.
Yes, that's a really interesting point you make. The reason, and this is really has to do more with the big hitters, price fixing, bribery, collusion. The reason people are willing to do those acts, which they clearly know are unethical, the reason they're willing to do that is because they can be a solution to a short-term problem. If you are having pricing issues, if you could just get that price up, price fixing is a good way to do that. If you have a facility that's low on work or going out of work and you can grab a contract through a bribe, you can fill that factory up by paying that bribe. That's what's so seductive about these unethical practices. And as you go forward, oftentimes, the management that took those actions are rewarded because they hit certain financial goals. And oftentimes, they have taken that financial reward and left the company before any real legal action comes to surface. So it's a real problem. Now, there have been some actions that have been taken, like clawbacks, that try to address these kind of issues. But at the end of the day, the only way you can truly prevent this is by having leaders who are highly ethical at their very core.
When it comes to incentives or disincentives for individuals to raise their hand and call attention to potentially unethical behavior,
sure.
How scary is that for an employee, and what kind of environment either fosters putting your hand up or says,
I think it's very, very difficult for an employee to be, we label it whistleblower, right? I mean, even the word we have for it is not particularly kind. And if you're running an organization and you think that you're going to be able to keep the organization on the straight and narrow because you've allowed whistleblowers, I think you're probably kidding yourself. You have to set the environment as the leader. And you can put mechanisms in place, such as ethics call lines, and make it clear that you are solicitous of any information about wrongdoing.
Have you ever seen someone's career implode because they threw themselves on the hand grenade in an attempt to call attention to bad behavior?
I don't know that I'd say I've seen the career implode, but I did witness an executive who was involved in a corporation that really had embraced bribery as a way of doing business. And he had been earmarked to be the number two man in that organization, and he walked away. Now, he could do that because he was already wealthy. Whether he would have done that if he weren't, I'm not so sure. But it was a pretty big sacrifice on his behalf.
If a company has engaged in one of the really egregious things, price fixing, bribery, et cetera,
sure.
Is changing management pretty much the only way that you can overcome that and kind of reset the culture towards an ethical environment?
If it's really egregious and it started at the top, or it was so close to the top that you would argue that the top needed to know, I would say that's right. I think you got to move out the part of the leadership that's really responsible for that. I don't think you can fix that problem. Plus, I think that's the only way you really do send a strong message down through the organization that performance is unacceptable.
When you were a CEO at United Defense, for example, what kind of practices did you have on a periodic or regular basis to remind people that ethics were important to you personally and to the management and the organization?
Well, we really emphasized I don't know if you want to call it the code of conduct, but it was a code of conduct in terms of how people, the expected behavior of employees in our organizations. We did have a training program that went on every year for all employees. We were in a business that did a lot of international work that for that industry lent itself to payments. And we made clear that that was unacceptable. And we used an outside firm to screen every single one of our representatives every year to make sure that that was not going on. And we made sure everybody in the organization knew that we did that. We did have ethics call lines. And one other thing that I personally did is I would travel to every site at least once a year. And we set aside a period of time while I was at that site that anybody could come and talk to me. Now, sometimes there weren't very many people, but other times there were a lot of folks, but never was there no one.
So what does ethics say about culture, and what does culture have to do with success?
Well, you know, The ethical framework of an organization goes a long way to defining the type of culture that you have. Let's face it, it influences the type of people who want to work for you. And the type of people who work for you, in a large part, defines your culture. Having said that now, culture is the best predictor of success of a company. A strong, ethical, customer-focused culture is probably more likely to be successful than one that's not. So it's, in many ways, it starts with the ethical framework that's being formed or is being encouraged for the organization that's going to define that culture, that's going to define that success. It's that straightforward.
So if you were to give one piece of advice to a CEO that you're mentoring, for example, or working with, that would help create the strongest ethical culture possible, what would it be?
I think what all CEOs have to come to grips with is, what is his or her ethical framework? Understand then that that ethical framework needs to be communicated as clearly as possible to the organization, and then put into place actions and procedures that will allow that to go all the way down through the organization. The training, the behavior, the emphasis, the constant communication, all of that is very important if you are going to have an ethical organization. But you have to have convinced yourself that ethics is important for your organization. Some CEOs that I've met don't necessarily think that way. They think that's something that you handle in church on Sunday and you leave it there for the rest of the week. And that's a big mistake.
Tom, can you give us an example of a kind of an ethical turnaround? You know, a company that fell on hard times because of bad behavior and through very concerted action really got their act together and really rose up.
Without naming the name of the company, you know, back in the late 80s, one of the major U.S. defense firms really had some ethical issues, not only around bribery, but also around false reporting to the government on the performance of various weapon systems. And it was clear that that behavior in a major part of their business was systemic, that they basically were doing false reporting around very important and sensitive weapon systems. The CEO was terminated by the board, and they brought in a very well-respected business statesman, I think is the best way to describe that individual. And they put through a very thorough ethical training program throughout that company that exists to this day. And I thought that it was a clear example of how you can take a very bad situation and turn it around.
So we've been talking with Tom Rabo, who is a Carlisle Operating Executive. And Tom, thank you so much for sharing your views on ethics, the impact that can have on value creation and culture. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Chris.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on Carlisle ValueCast.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at www.carlisle.com. This has been a Carlisle ValueCast podcast.